I don't know if you ever heard of hospitality as being considered an art. I know that there are classes on, you know, using the right fork and that kind of stuff at a setting. I don't know how many of you guys, when you sit down to a table and they have all the forks and spoons, and you're like, I just need a spoon and I need a fork. But there's an art to some of those things. We're not getting into that. That's not what this is about. But just considering and looking at the concept of hospitality. And what are we doing ourselves for being people that are known for being hospitable? But when you think of hospitality, what do we think about? What are we thinking about, or what are common examples of hospitality? Having somebody over for dinner, right? That's a common hospitality thing. Is there any region of the United States that's known for hospitality more than others? Southern hospitality, right? We know about that. But what is that? Is it just having somebody over for dinner? It's much more than that. But when we look at hospitality, it's what we can do for others. And the Bible has a lot to say about hospitality. And, you know, there are things we can do as far as having people over, being mindful of other people. Now, there's lots of concepts or thoughts about what hospitality can be. The Bible says in Romans chapter 12, concerning these things, let love be without hypocrisy. That's a loaded statement right there, right? Before we even get into the rest of the passage here. But love being out without hypocrisy is more than just lip service, right? It's I'm doing something. Abhor what's evil, cling to what's good, devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor. Do you know that we're supposed to prefer one another? Like, you know, we're supposed to want to be around and prefer one another. And that's something that as a body of believers, we're supposed to have that here. And not lagging behind in diligent, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. And we see this list, right? And we're going through this. And we're like, yeah, I can see that. I can understand that. I got that. And then we get down to contributing to the needs of the saints and practicing hospitality. These are things that we're supposed to do. Right? These are things that are supposed to be named among us, as the Bible would use that terminology. In Hebrews chapter 13, let love of the brethren continue. So a very similar concept. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by this some have entertained angels without knowing it. Now, this passage here, this phrase, entertaining angels without knowing it, it does not mean that, like, the highway to heaven concept, that Michael Landon's going to show up at your door. Some of you grasp what I'm saying. If you were born in the 1900s, you might understand what I'm talking about, right? But do you remember the show, like the angels show up? I remember like bits and pieces. I think saw a few episodes. But that is not what this is talking about. There were those, it is, as you read, like for example of Lot. When Lot first sees these two men come into the city, and he invites them into his house. He uses the word Lord like as yes sir kind of concept with these men. He notices that they're different. He does not know, the text does not tell us that he knew they were angels until after they did this whole thing of like pulling you into the door and blinded the men, right? That's when his like concept of who they were changed a bit. Because these men were going to do what was common in that time. It was like, well, we don't know anybody in the city. We'll sleep in the square, right? It's just they were traveling through. They'll sleep in the square. And Lot, knowing the city, probably knowing the square, said, no, you don't want to do that. And this was that form of the Near Eastern hospitality. Like, I've taken you into my house, and I've taken you under my protection. That's why he went through such lengths. It was taboo to do anything different than to bring them under that protection. That is still continues today. There are movies even today with that based on that concept that when you bring somebody into your house in that culture, you've brought them under your house and under your roof of protection. So Lot's like, no, you guys don't need to sleep in the square. You're gonna be with me. So he did not know they're angels. So that's what this is maybe referring to. Some have unawares attended, you know, seen to the needs of angels. Not Michael Landon, all right? So if you're waiting for an angel to show up at your door, it's not going to happen. Sorry. if I'm bursting bubbles this morning. All right. So with this, so by doing this, we need to make sure that this is just part our common practice. Remember prisoners as though in prison with them, and those who are ill-treated, since you yourselves are also in the body. Now, these particular, in this context, when we talk about prisoners, who are we talking about? Which prisoners? All prisoners? Like a church in order, like, who are we talking about? Which prisoners? Brethren who are in prison wrongfully because of the faith, right? Brethren who are in prison wrongfully are who we're talking about specifically. And so, and this phrase here, you yourselves also in the body, also obviously gives us that context. So over and over again, the Bible continues to talk about this concept of hospitality. We see it again in 1 Peter. Above all. The Bible says something like that, above all. Do our ears need to, like, we need to listen to that. How many of you have, like, been talking with your spouse or something like that, and you're in the car, and kids are not paying attention, right? Not paying attention at all. But as soon as you mention their name, radar goes up, right? And all of a sudden, they're paying attention, right? They're listening to all the nuances of your conversation now. So that's what this is. This is, like, above all, we need to, like, get our radar up. What are we talking about here? Keep fervent in your love for one another, because love covers a multitude of sins. And this just, it's like God knew that, you know, I'm going to bring all these people together from different cultures, different languages, different backgrounds, different worldviews. I'm going to bring them into this one melting pot, and they're going to need something that fuses them together, right? They're going to need something that brings them together, despite all their inconsistencies, despite the fact that they're going to mess up from time to time. What's that one thing that's going to keep them bonded and unified? It's going to cover the sins of every once in a while. Somebody says something they shouldn't, take something out of context, something happens, and they need to come back together again. What is that one thing? Love, right? That's that thing that brings everybody. Love covers a multitude of sins. Be hospitable to one another without complaint. There was a practice in that time when they were traveling around the church and going from town to town and preaching the gospel and seeing to the needs of the saints. They didn't have a Best Western, right? I mean, they couldn't afford to stay in Motel 8. Nobody left a light on for them, okay? And so when they went to these towns, they would find the brethren where they met, and that's where they would stay. And so somebody comes into town. Was it on your schedule? Did you, like, hey, I can have you come into town maybe next week if that works out? That's unannounced, right? There's no, you had no concept. You're going out to do your business or whatever it is, and all of a sudden you have people show up. They're traveling through or staying for who knows how long. Guess what? Without complaint, we need to be hospitable, is what this passage is teaching. As each one has received a special gift, and this is talking specifically maybe about the spiritual gifts in the context of miraculous, but we can obviously talk about this in the construct of what we've been blessed with, can't we? Can we talk about being hospitable? As I've been blessed, I'm going to make sure I turn around and be a blessing to others. I'm going to use what God has blessed me with to be hospitable, to be a blessing to others as well. And serving one another as good stewards, not necessarily of this spiritual gift or the special gift, but also of what God has given me in my life. And as we think about just the word of hospitality, if you break this down, can y'all read that? I can't read it from back here on that screen, but are y'all good? Okay, excellent. You guys are awesome. All right. So when we look at this word, in the Greek, you can break it down into two words. This phileo, this brotherly love concept, lover of strangers, are the two root words. Now, you cannot always do this in Greek. Don't go to the Greek and say, all right, I can break down the root words of all the Greek words and just bring out all this meaning and just unlock all these little Easter eggs of knowledge that I've never had before. It doesn't work. Because kindness literally means lover of brains, if you break it down into, like, the two words, lover of brains. So it doesn't work, all right? Kindness does not mean you're a zombie. It just doesn't work all that way, right? So in this way, it works. So lover of strangers and being kind to strangers. So what is the opposite of, sometimes helping to know what hospitality is, looking at its opposite helps. So what is the opposite of hospitality? Fear of strangers. The fear of strangers. Do we have fear of, is there an innate fear of strangers or people we don't know? You know, it can be awkwardness. It's just awkward to talk to somebody. Totes awkward. It can be awkward. And that's how anything is if you've never done something, right? It's always awkward the first time. Fear and anxieties, maybe about somebody we don't know, just maybe our background. We don't know what's going on with this person. Fear for safety. You know, we've been taught a lot about that. We don't pick up hitchhikers, right? We don't do that. Historically speaking, it's been more dangerous for hitchhikers than it has been for those who are hitchhiking. But we're not going to get into that. Maybe our biases keep us from strangers. Learned behavior. Stranger danger, right? Now, there's some, like, you don't just go jumping into any white van that sells candy, right? Like, there's some need for this. That's, you guys can laugh. Sorry. Bible class. I'm not preaching yet. So there's that kind of thing, maybe, that's kind of lack of empathy or compassion. Did you know that we're having to teach empathy and compassion in school? Because kids are not learning empathy and compassion in the home. Did you ever thought that that would be something that would be taught in schools? We're going to have to teach you how to use your heart, right? Or maybe it's fallen out of cultural norm. It's not normal. How many of you have, like, let me just say this, moved down here to South Florida, and it's not common just to say, hi, how you doing? Have y'all tried that? Social experiment. Try being, like, super kind. Like, what you think Southern kindness is like, hey, how are y'all doing? How's your mom and them, right? You don't hear anybody saying, how's your mom and them down here, do you? Do you hear that? How many of you even know what I'm talking about? How's your mom and them? All right, some of you know what I'm talking about. Maybe also from the 1900s. All right, so, but you don't see that. If somebody comes up to you down here, and somebody like, hey, how you doing? What's going on? Like, and you know, just super kind, what do you think? What are you thinking immediately? What do you want? Right? Car insurance salesman. Like, there's a red light goes off, and there's like, what's going on here? What is all this? Right? This is not normal. Do you know, it's like, I'm gonna buck the system, and I'm just gonna be nice. I don't care if you think it's awkward. I'm just gonna do it. If you're driving down the road in certain areas in the South, and you have your hand on the steering wheel, and you do one of these things, you know, like you just lift your hand off the steering wheel and you wave. You know what I'm talking about? That's just like, you do that in a community, right? We you know, say hi. It's just like, I acknowledge your presence, and I acknowledge you're there. It's like super small. I literally have to move 4 fingers, right? So I started doing it. It's like, I don't care. I'm gonna do it. And but people start doing it more often. I was like, wow, this is nice. Not that I caused that change necessarily. Let me think I did. But do you understand what, like, we start just doing it. I'm just gonna do it anyway, because that should be who I am, and people should know that I'm that nice guy, right? On most days. So and then when we think about hospitality as well, sometimes we let hospitality be just this thing that gets done over there, right? It gets channeled through other entities or government programs or something like that, and it just becomes something that does that over there. Well, the church should do this, right? The church should have this program or do this over here. And when we think about that, that's us, right? Like, we don't have to have a program to be hospitable. I don't have to have a program to write cards. I don't have a program to do, be nice to somebody or invite somebody over. It doesn't have to be part of any kind of, it just should be what we do. And when we think about hospitality, being known for hospitality, I don't get to, like, just say, well, I did something and they're doing it, and, you know, that's fine. That's part of, it needs to be something I do, my household, my family, what we do, being hospitable in our lives. And so, we don't relegate it to something else. It's something that we do individually, on an individual basis, and as a congregation. And looking at this concept of hospitality comes from an Old Testament concept that we see a lot throughout the first five books of the Bible. This concept of taking care of strangers or aliens. This is not like X-Files aliens is, you know, obviously people who are not, ain't from around these parts, okay, is what we would say in the South. They ain't from around here. So that's what, those kind of aliens, okay? So anybody who's a stranger, an alien, there was an obligation to take care of them and to help them. And even in the harvest, and when they harvest things, there were things that were left in the fields, there were provisions that were made for those who were traveling, those who were not there, those who were just those who did not have means. Those kind of things are supposed to be left because I am the Lord your God. That's what needs to happen. And that's what God said, because I told you so. Well, why do I have to, like, you know, I have a square field and I got around the corners off and I have like all that wheat out there. I have all that produce, or somebody dropped a basket or a bushel got left out in the field. Why do I have to leave that? That's mine. I did all the work. I did all these things. I did this. And God said, because I told you so. Right? I'm the Lord your God. That's why this has to happen. You mean that's provision that was made for people. Even in Deuteronomy 14, at the end of every third year, you shall bring all the tithe of your produce in that year and shall deposit it in your town. And the alien and the orphan and the widow who are in your town shall come and eat and be satisfied in order that the Lord your God may bless you. May bless you. I'm reading this and I forgot I didn't put it up there. I thought it was supposed to just like... There you go. Now you have it. Deuteronomy 14. Getting ahead of myself. So excited. All right. So when we look at this concept, God says, you need to do this and I will bless you. This should be something that we do. The stranger who resides with you shall be to you as a native among you, and you shall love him as yourself, for you are aliens in Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Where have we heard this? You shall love your neighbor as yourself. So the origin, when he said, well, who is my neighbor? Remember that story? The Good Samaritan? Who is my neighbor? Was the question, and then Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan. We have the Levi, we have the priest. They were doing culturally taboo things by not helping that individual. It wasn't that they were just not being nice, right? They were just being meanies because they weren't helping this person who was in need. Jesus was saying they were culturally taboo what they were doing by not helping that individual. It, not only that, but it was against the Torah, it was against the law of God to just pass them by and not help them. Here are these people who are supposed to be pillars of what it is to be a child of God, you know, to be the son of Abraham. And they weren't doing it. So it was sort of, Jesus was getting kind of, you know, pointed there with his lesson when he says a Samaritan, who in their minds was less religiously, was less in their concept of what it meant to be obedient to the Torah, came and was a neighbor. Remember Jesus' question? Which one of them showed compassion? Right? So the heart of that concept, of the Good Samaritan concept, comes from because of who I am, because who I am to God, I need to help where I can. Where I can. We see this also again in Deuteronomy 27. Cursed is he who distorts the justice due to an alien, orphan, or widow. Even in the time of Abraham and during the patriarchal system, which Job was written or in that time, Job said concerning himself, I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame. I took care of those who couldn't help themselves. And so he was that hospitable, even though his friends were trying to say, well, there's something wrong with you, Job. Something wrong with you in what you're doing. So that's the background of what it is to be hospitable. That's the background when the Bible concept comes up and says, love your neighbor as yourself. That's where we're going with this. That leads into this concept of hospitality. And we see it throughout. The New Testament. Here are a few examples. Lydia offered Paul her home at her conversion. Acts chapter 16, when Paul goes there to Philippi, their habit was to go to the place where people worshiped. Obviously, they were supposed to go. Normally, they went to where? What were they looking for when Paul went to an area? The synagogue. Why are we going to the synagogue? That's where I'm going to go. That's where the Jews were. They should know about God. It should be an easy sell. All things being equal, they already have a concept of who Yeshua is or who God is and who all that. They should have a concept of who this is, and I can start there. And it wasn't only that, but the message was to the Jew first and then the Gentile. So that was supposed to how it was supposed to go. Sorry, I said that wrong. But anyway, I'm tired. So we move on. So when we look at what he's supposed to be doing, he does that. But in this case, in Philippi, where did they go? Acts chapter 16, where was there a synagogue? Where did they go? To the river. Right, there's a song about that, right? But we're not going to get into that. So they went to the river, and that's where people gathered. And he begins teaching them. And we have Lydia, a seller of purple, a worshiper of God, and was there. So after her conversion, they're now in that city, and there's no Motel 8, right? So what does she do immediately? Opens her house. There are those who brought the gospel to her home. She opens her house. And they stay there. You know, this continues to be a case in a lot of mission, in a lot of the mission field. When I went to Easter Island, I was staying in hotels and that kind of stuff for years before we had, you know, first converts. But now when I go there, I stay in their home. And it would be weird and awkward if I say, well, no, I'll stay in a hotel or whatever. I don't want to, no, they wouldn't have it any other way. Because, you know, there's that heart of hospitality for them. But can you see just the benefit and being that close with them and them sharing and them taking part of what's going on? Anyway, so it becomes a beautiful thing. And this is what happens here in this case. Also in Acts 16, with the jailer. I find this is an interesting thing, that when you have the earthquake and the jailer's going to kill himself, you know, he thinks everybody's escaped from the prison, and Paul there in Philippi, and they say, no, we're all here, and then they teach him the gospel. And you know, he washed his stripes, because Paul was beaten there. He washed his stripes. And the text does not say that he repented, although we know that is part of the process. But I believe that when he's washing his stripes, that's his heart of repentance. It may have been that he had it ordered that be done. It may have been he that did it. We don't know. But he washes his stripes, and then he is baptized, he and his household. And then they come to his household. And he becomes a pillar of that congregation there. And so we begin to see this, how hospitality is woven throughout the book of Acts. And we start looking at just that concept throughout the Gospels, or throughout how the Gospel was spread. Paul stayed with Aquila in Corinth in Acts 18. Paul stayed at the home of Philip in Caesarea. We have in the Mason from Cyprus on his travels. Paul stayed with him. That is how you spell it, by the way. So, Paul stayed with Publius in the island of Malta. Gaius, and that's where he wrote. Peter stayed in the home of Simon the Tanner, and we'll talk about that. And then we have the example of the early church in Acts chapter 2. So what did the early church do? When we talk about hospitality, what was the early church kind of known for in Acts chapter 2 and early on? What were they doing? They were sharing, right? They had everything in common. Why were they doing it? What was the special need? Was it like the church said, hey, this would be a great program. Let's do this. You know, there's several people here that could probably use something. Why? Why did that happen? Yes. So the church just starts. Remember, this is Pentecost. People from all nations everywhere were here. And then you have at least, in the first day, 3,000 people were baptized. 3,000 people were added to the Lord's kingdom. They were from all over the place, right? They had needs. It was needs-driven. This concept of hospitality is needs-driven. Not my emotional needs to help somebody, but the case-by-case thing, we're going to take care of these people because this needs to happen. And so they did that thing. And we see that throughout the New Testament. Look over in Luke. Luke talks a lot about hospitality. In Luke chapter 10, verses 1 through 16, we call this like the limited commission. The limited commission. They were sent out. The 12 and then the 70 were sent out. Luke mentions that. And when they went out, what was different here? There was a certain way they were supposed to go when they went out. What does the text tell us that they were supposed to do and not do? They were not to do what? Carry any provisions with them, right? You're not gonna do that. Why? This is open book, you guys can. There was supposed to be provision for them, right? The Lord was going to provide for them, the people that they were going to go see and talk to. Carry no money belt, no bag, no shoes, whatever the house you enter. First, peace be to the house. If a man is peace there, of peace is there, your peace will rest on him. And so stay in the house, eating and drinking what is given you. Eating and drinking what is given you, for the labor is worth his wages. Do not keep moving from house to house, verse 7. So one, you get to go in there, and they're going to be hospitable for you. But if they're serving you, Easy Mac without bacon bits that you put in your Easy Mac normally at your mom's house, and you've just got to eat the Easy Mac without the bacon bits, right? Do you understand what I'm saying? You eat whatever they serve you without complaining. If you want some stories about that, I'm sure people have had stories about different things, but you eat and you don't complain. And you appreciate what's been given for you. Why does it mention here in verse 7, don't keep moving from house to house? What does that look like? If I was like, all right, thanks, I'm going to go over to this house now for a few days. Thanks, I'm going to go over to this house. What do people begin to think about you? I am a consumer, right? I'm going to take these resources. I'm going to take advantage of this situation. And that was the case, right? I mean, there are people out there who would say, hey, I'm just going to say I'm a Christian, and they're going to come in and feed me for a few days, and then I'll be on my way. And there's no way to know. They can't check my Facebook profile and know if I'm really who I am, right? There's no way over them background checking like that. They're just going to take me at face value. And so that was something that was a concern in the time. But you're not supposed to be doing that. And their response to these people, look over in verse 16. The one who listens to you listens to me, and the one who rejects you rejects me, and he who rejects me rejects the one who sent me. So when we talk about hospitality, and in this case, how the people responded to the message and to these messengers was, in fact, taken how they would respond and have responded to Christ. And so this is kind of like, an extra Easter egg here as far as like us sharing the gospel. When you share the gospel with somebody, are they rejecting you? Are they saying no to you when they say, no, we don't want to do that? Who are they saying no to? God, ultimately God, yes. You guys connected the dots. I was going to go dot to dot, but yes, they're rejecting God. And so that removes a whole lot of weight on us, right? Like, do I, and I'll just say from an early age when I thought I was sharing the gospel with somebody, if I shared the gospel with them and they didn't, and they said no, then like all that pressure was on me because they said no and I didn't do something right or I didn't say the magic word combo that made them, like, no, that's them. That's all them. That's not mine. That's an extra, I didn't intend to talk about that much, but anyway, that's extra for you. Look over in Luke 24. And you've heard me talk about this before. I'll talk about it from the standpoint of hospitality. But this is commonly known as the road to Emmaus, right? We have those disciples that are after the resurrection of Jesus, and Jesus feigns to be a stranger among them, right? I love this story. I'm sorry. I can't smile, and I can't talk about the story and not smile. So he's like, hey, what are you guys talking about, right? What were they talking about? Hey, things are not going down like we thought were supposed to happen, right? This is not what was supposed to happen. And so Jesus, like, sneaks up behind him and say, hey, what you talking about, right? And they're like, what? Where have you been, right? Everybody's been talking about this, right? This is like one of the, like, have you been living under the rock comments kind of thing here. And so, you know, they tell him, like, this is the third day, and some of the disciples said that he's risen from some of the ladies have said that he's risen from the grave, and we thought he was supposed to redeem Israel, right? And then the whole face-palmed Jesus and said, you know, slow to believe. And so he begins to teach them as they're walking these 8 miles to Emmaus. And what's interesting is when they get to where the destination of the disciples, the text tells us that Jesus is going to make it like he was leaving, right? It's like, I'm just going to keep on walking, you know, I'm just going to, you know, you ever done that? How many of you have done that? Like, be honest, I've done it, at least when I was this age, but I've done it. Where you're sort of like begging an invitation. I'm like, oh, well, you know, I got to go. I'm not sure what I'm going to eat today, but I'm going to keep. It's kind of one of those kind of things, right? So they insist that Jesus stays with them. And he does. What happens in this meal? He broke bread. Bazam, whatever, I don't know if there's a noise. All of a sudden, they now know who he is, right? Their eyes have been opened to know that his identity is revealed. Clint Clark took off his sunglasses, and now they know it's Superman, right? So now we understand who this is. It's not Clint, I forgot that name. But anyway, Clark Kent. There's a lot of seed names there. Anyway, so he took off his glasses, and they know who he is, and like he leaves, right? Around a table. Hospitality around a table. A lot of things were done around the table. Take, eat. This is my body. Around a table. There's an important concept there with hospitality. Lastly, get over to Acts 9. Acts 9:43, Peter is at the house of Simon the Tanner. And it's like a threefold layer of hospitality here in this section of Scripture. We're not going to read all of this. We're not going to go through all of it. But I just wanted to kind of see like the dynamic here in that we see the hospitality of Simon the Tanner with Peter and him being there in that house and whatever, all the things that Peter may have been doing there. We don't know how long he was there necessarily. And then Peter as a guest in Simon's house. In this concept of hospitality, like, it kind of goes both ways, right? Like, somebody offers you, like, you're the recipient of hospitality. How am I supposed to act? How am I supposed to act if I am the recipient of hospitality, somebody's good graces, and they grateful for whatever they do, right? If they say, hey, we're going to make some sandwiches for lunch, and we have mayonnaise. And you're like, oh, do you have like extra virgin olive oil mayonnaise, maybe? Like, no, we don't do that. Just whatever it is, like, we receive and are thankful for that. And so there's the two sides there of what it is to be hospitable and receive hospitality. And then Peter's the guest in Cornelius' home. Why is this even just an amazing, mind-blowing thing that Peter would be in the house of Cornelius? Why is that culturally mind-blowing in that time? We have Jew and Gentile scenario going on, right? And never the twain shall meet. Usually that's the case. Oil and water. Doesn't happen. Did God have to do a lot in order to explain to Peter that, like, things are different now? Things are different now, Peter. So we had, you know, all the, you know, the how sheet comes down, all the animals on it, which is now our blessing for barbecue. And Peter's like, no, I've never done that. I've never killed and eat those things. And Peter, the light comes on. Now, was Peter super consistent? Like, after this event, Peter never went back to this. No, he did. He slipped in and out of this a little bit. Paul withstood him to the face in the book of, as he tells us in the book of Galatians. But the church, ladies and gentlemen, this was 10 years after Acts 2, right? So taken a while for the church to grasp this concept that, hey, this is for everyone. Everybody's involved in this. And so this is a big event. Peter accepts the hospitality. What does it say in verse 25? When Peter entered in Cornelius' feet, Peter raised him up, saying, "Stand up, I too am just a man." And so he goes in. But in verse 24, I think it's important to know that Cornelius was waiting for them and had called together his relatives and close friends. God's coming. God's messenger is coming. An important message from God is coming. And he's calling all the people that are close to him, come in. Come in, we're going to hear this. In verse 28, "And yet God has shown me that I should not call any man unholy or unclean." And so he said, "That is why I came without even raising any objection when I was sent for." And Cornelius begins to talk about what happened. And so he brings him in. And so he says in verse 33, "So I sent for you immediately." Let me catch up here. I'm horrible with clicking sometimes. I need to give y'all the clicker maybe so y'all can catch up with, where is Josh going? All right, so I sent for you immediately, and you have been kind enough to come. Now when we are all here present before God to hear all that you have been commanded by the Lord. Peter comes in, has an audience. Obviously, God's hands at work here. Obviously, we have hearts at play. We have people who have heard the message and stuff. But at the center of this, at the center of all of this, is the concept of hospitality. Hospitality played a part in the spread of the gospel. Hospitality played a part in the lives here that we see about. Again, another layer of this story. God's at the forefront of all of this. But another layer of this is seeing how hospitality plays out and became a vehicle for the message of the gospel, right? So we see that play out. It's an important aspect in the church, and it should be named among us as well. Are there excuses for hospitality? Some of them legitimate, maybe, depending on what's going on, depending on our resources, depending on several things. But some of the excuses are like the social excuse. That's just not for me. Hospitality just isn't for me. Can we say that? Like, when you signed up to be a Christian and you said, "Yes, I'm all in," it included hospitality, just saying. It was there already. It included that, all right? That's part of the gig, all right? So it includes that. We can't say, "Well, that's just not for me." I'm not good at small talk. Have you met somebody who could talk to a wall? All right? Like, I know people that if you just left, they would keep on talking, right? Like, they're going to talk. There are people like that. And there are people who have to learn maybe to be that. But is this really an excuse? It is an excuse, but it's a legitimate excuse. I don't know how to make small talk. You can share stories. I'm sure you have things to talk about and ask questions. A lot of communication, a lot of like legitimate communications is asking the right questions, right? When I'm teaching these kids down here, you cannot ask yes or no questions because guess what? Not a yes or no question, is it? I'm going to get a yes or no answer, right? That's not. I want more from a class. So when you're asking, you got to ask right questions. And a lot of conversation isn't about what you say; it's about what you ask, maybe. But anyway, not the right time excuse. I'm too busy. Is there anybody in here that's not too busy? Raise your hand if you have just gobs of time on your hand. Nobody is not like I literally sit around and do nothing. We are good at filling up time. If we have spare time, we're going to fill it up with something. So maybe make some space. The money excuse, does hospitality have to cost money? Maybe in food and things like that, maybe depending on, but it doesn't always. Being nice and kind to strangers can be within our means depending on what it is. But it doesn't always have to cost money. Maybe my house is too small for thinking about specifically people coming to my home. My house is too small. Well, invite smaller people, right? Does that work? Maybe don't invite a household of 8 people to your home. There are a lot of people that could use some attention, need some help, that aren't that. The experience excuse, that was something, you know, maybe my grandmother did, and other people did that. I don't have experience in doing that. We're on the flip side of that sometimes, though, too, right? Where you're applying for a job, must be, you know, young, but have 10 years of experience. And you're like, wait a second. I'm supposed to be young, but have 10 years of experience? How does that work, right? It doesn't work. And so sometimes we're on the other side of this experience, this desire for experience table, but sometimes we use it, well, I just don't have a lot of experience in doing that thing. How do we overcome that? Maybe we just need to get some experience. Have you ever tried something new? Legitimately, never done it before. I'm going to try something new. I'm just going to let you know that typically I get frustrated with myself because I try something and I see a thing that looks super simple. Like there's this game, Viking's Chess is the street term for it, and you throw a stick at other sticks. Sounds simple, right? I was so frustrated. I'm literally throwing a stick. Why can't I throw a stick the way I want and make it land like I want? You know what? It takes experience to throw the stick the right way in that game. So maybe we need to relax a little bit and just say, right, I'm going to try this. I've never done it before. We're going to have people over. I'm going to do something. I'm going to step outside my comfort zone and be hospitable in some way. And it doesn't always have to be coming to your house. It can be a lot of different things. But I'm going to step outside my comfort zone and be hospitable. I'm going to love strangers. That's who I'm going to be. Hospitality. Almost said it wrong. Can be stopping on the side of the road and to help somebody. That can be hospitality. Sorry, we're almost done here. All right, but you understand what I'm saying. It's a lot. It's going to be very different. And the excuse of I'm afraid to open up to my life. And that happens, or my spouse isn't supportive. There's a lot of different excuses, but there's ways of helping still and being hospitable. And so hopefully this lesson this morning has just opened us up to looking at how we can use the resources God has given us, use our lives, and use our hearts, and looking outside and helping people in different ways. Any comments, questions, concerns? Thank you very much for your time this morning. Oh, I'm sorry, we have one in the back. Yes.
It starts with one.
Yes, very much so. I got to start somewhere and start doing it. Thank you very much for y'all's time this morning.